Well, good evening and welcome to West End Dumplings, the radio edition for August 14th. I'm your host, Christian Cassidy. And today coming up in the show, my guests are from the Community News Commons. We're going to find out more about what they're all about and how you can become involved. You can check them out at communitynewscommons.org. And in the meantime, here's a little bit of mood music for you. Here's Joe Jackson with Sunday Papers on 101.5 UMFM.
We'll be right back.
Well, welcome back to West End Dumplings, the radio edition. And that was a little bit of Joe Jackson and Sunday Papers. And we have a full studio today. We're going to be talking about Community News Commons, which is a grassroots public media project that's based right here in Winnipeg. And joining me right now is Noah Ehrenberg, and he's the Community News Commons News Associate. Okay. Is that with or the convener with the Winnipeg Foundation, that's which is correct. One of the major sponsors of the project. So tell me, what's the Community News Commons all about?
Well, Community News Commons, as you were saying, or it's also known as CNC, Community News Commons is basically a citizen journalism community engagement project that the Winnipeg Foundation started back in 2012. Now, the beginnings of it really go back to a foundation called Knight Foundation in the United States.
Okay.
Now, Knight Foundation, they made a lot of money in the newspaper industry, or at least Knight Rider newspapers.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah.
And so for a long time, they owned many, many newspapers. And about 15, 20 years ago, they started to see a crisis, upcoming crisis in the newspaper industry, and you know we see that today.
Yeah.
And Knight decided that what they wanted to do was make sure that local foundations or local communities across the United States and Canada and around the world had some access to local information in light of what was going on in the newspaper industry.
Yeah, because in the States especially, I mean, Sacramento, I mean, there were some big cities that lost their daily paper.
Oh, yeah, and you see a 30 to 35% reduction of newspaper reporters in the United States just in the last 10 years, and that's only getting worse. So when Knight saw this, they decided to basically create, they have this foundation, Knight Foundation, which basically supports journalism projects around the world, and they decided to start something called Knight Community Information Challenge, which was a granting program. So they would grant money to a foundation or to a place-based organization that would be for the development of an information project. It could be a citizen journalism project, could be a whole range of different types of local information project. And the idea was that they would provide a grant, and then the local foundation would match that grant. The Winnipeg Foundation decided to apply for this, and they applied twice in 2009, 2010, and then finally in 2011, they did receive a grant from the Knight Foundation, which they matched, and it allowed them to start something called Community News Commons, which is the citizen journalism project and community engagement effort that we started in 2012. So they hired me to convene it, basically to run it. And what it entailed was to create a website, to create a training curriculum, to engage citizenry on a local level to tell stories, multimedia stories from their communities. And that's what we've done over the course of the last 4 years. Since July 2012 was when we started the website. We've been doing workshops since that's the spring of 2012, and we offer those workshops twice a year, over the course of 6 weeks, two times a week, like two nights a week.
Yeah.
And these are basically workshops that are convened by myself and other professional journalists to teach citizens how to tell multimedia stories, how to shoot a great photograph, how to write an article, how to do a review, how to shoot or record some audio, basically how to be a journalist.
Yeah.
And that was really it was an effort that started back then, and it has actually grown in a very big way. And the Winnipeg Foundation, you know, in all of its sort of insight, or at least a foresight, saw that this would be a really important thing.
Well, I was thinking, what do you think was the tie-in that you know, they foresaw that community news, in the Winnipeg context, that community news was going to build community, which is what the Winnipeg Foundation is all about. What do you think that link was?
Well, you know, they're not alone in understanding the relationship between information and the health of our community. You see this in the United States now. A lot of nonprofit foundations, a lot of groups in the United States are getting behind the world of journalism, and they're supporting local efforts for quality journalism.
So, and you see even that on PBS NewsHour. There's a lot of
exactly.
segments segments that they'll have that are, you know, co-sponsored by two or three.
That's
know,
right.
Sending somebody over to Iraq to report or something.
Exactly.
Like that.
And you'll also find now where, for example, a newspaper in Philadelphia that was in trouble, the community foundation in Philadelphia decided that that newspaper is so important to our community and so important to the health of our community that we need to support it. And okay. So they've done that. They've done that not in terms of an editorial way. It's like, here, you need the support to carry on your effort as a local media source, as a public trust, really, yeah. is what it comes down to. And so I think the Winnipeg Foundation saw that there was a, you know, that the world of journalism was changing, the world of community was changing in terms of how people communicate and how we gather information, how we disseminate it. And I think they were right in assuming that if we offered this to people for free, which essentially we do, we offer them the opportunity to be a journalist, we offer the training, we offer sort of the editorial mentorship that I provide, mm-hmm. and it's all for free. And I think the idea was that if we did this, people would glom onto it, and they would definitely want to be a part of it. And I think we've seen that that's the case.
Now, is this unique to Canada?
The community or the Knight Community Information Challenge grant that we received, yeah. the Winnipeg Foundation received, was the only Canadian organization that received that. And now there are primary. We applied with three primary partners: the Winnipeg Free Press and Free Press Cafe, the Red River College, and primarily the journalism program there, as well as Winnipeg Public Libraries. Now those are our three primary partners, and so they provide a lot of support, in terms of, say, journalists that will do some workshops. The library will provide space for us. We do collaborate on different projects. Red River College, for example, their journalism students will have an assignment or two or three assignments each year that they publish on the Community News Commons. And for their part, three of their stories over the course of the last 3 years have won local journalism awards that were published on Community News Commons. So it was a number of their students have used their being published on CNC as a means to build a portfolio. So
it
really has become an opportunity for journalists or people who want to be journalists to practice their craft and to tell stories from their community that they care about and they think other people should care about.
And even bloggers, people who are
maybe
going in, want to blog but aren't sure whether, you know, here's a great place to kind of spring off and try it out.
And you know, to that point, there are secondary partnerships. Like, in fact, I would consider West End Dumplings as a secondary partnership in the project because we published some of your mm-hmm. blogs on CNC yeah. as well. You know, say a radio station like CJNU is a partner.
Yes.
Another community radio station. They provide a newscast twice a day that we publish, that we post on the site on communitynewscommons.org, as well as a couple of commentaries every week from Roger Curry, who's at CJNU.
And we will have a commentary by Roger Curry coming up in the show. That'll be part of my PSA break.
So, you know, there is an opportunity to really celebrate our community, to bring our people together. And it's amazing what happens when you do bring people together on a regular basis, which we've done for the last 4 years, in terms of these training sessions. It really is an amazing thing to see the type of camaraderie and sort of mutual admiration and respect that we have for each other as community members. And it's so diverse. Like, I've worked in the news business for 30 years, and I've never, ever worked in a situation or in a newsroom that is as diverse as Community News Commons. It's young and old, it's rich and poor, it's from all
Which
sorts
is something
of different
that
backgrounds.
Newspapers traditionally aren't all the time.
Well,
they at least are. People complain that, you know, there's kind of a one view that comes from newspapers often.
Sure, and I think you can make that argument about pretty much any sort of type of whether it's newspapers or whether it whether it's academia the government. Or,
yeah.
I mean, things are starting to change, and newspapers have been slow to change. But unfortunately, I think for newspapers, they've got much bigger problems now than diversity.
Yes,
when it comes to survival.
And when we're talking about news in the Community News Commons, we're talking to kind of everything you would see in a traditional newspaper. I mean, there's sports, there's arts, there's reviews, community news. This isn't just, you know, people having to dedicate a whole bunch of time to go do hard news and track down interviews. And
that's correct. And it is different. It is different because citizen journalists have day jobs. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I mean, they're doing this on their off time. They're doing this as volunteers primarily. And so it becomes a labor of love for them. But I think to another extent, Traditional journalism is there, like we're there sort of as a complement and not as, like we're non-competitive. And that, you can't say that about pretty much any media in Canada or the United States. I mean, it's a sliver that would be non-competitive. But that's what we are. We're non-competitive, we're collaborative, we're cooperative. So the idea is that we don't really care about owning that story. We care about the story getting out there. And and I think that, I say it's a complement to traditional journalism because I think we need to know all the things that traditional journalism tells us, whether it's, you know, where the fire was last night or even some of the investigative journalism that they might do. Mm-hmm. Basically, we need journalism as a public trust, and traditional media is essential. We also need the voice of the people, I think, which is what CNC provides, is an opportunity for citizens to really share their views. Some of them do some news coverage, some of them do some commentary, some of them do some reviews of concerts. A lot of things that are reported on Community News Commons are things that you may not necessarily see in traditional media, but we've had the experience over the course of the last year and a half, well, actually a few years since the beginning, where the traditional media will see a story on CNC and then they'll run with it. Make, you know, they'll actually they'll see a lot of value in it and they'll take it. They're like the bus driver, you know, giving away his shoes back in September of 2012.
That went national, didn't it?
Well, it went international for that matter. I mean, we had 150,000 people looking at the site, and that was just 2 months after we had started. And it was a simple 200-word story about a bus driver who gave away his shoes in the middle of his morning run because he's bus run, that is, because he saw a man on the street without shoes, and it was a very cold fall day. And so that story, if we were a traditional media outlet, we probably would have hung on to it. We would have tried to track down the bus driver. Instead, we just reported it. We got it out there, and it spent, 3 days on the front page of the Winnipeg Free Press, three days running above the fold. The bus driver was on the, New York CBS Morning News with the mayor at the time, Mayor Cates. So it was one of those things where, you know, the story, a very small story, became quite a sensation. So you never know what will be dug up by citizens when it comes to telling stories.
Yeah, that's right. Interesting, you said one of the partners is the Winnipeg Free Press, that the CNC is seen as non-competitive, and which is kind of, because you think in an industry, in journalism in general, that is, you know, death by a thousand cuts all over the place, a traditional newspaper maybe wouldn't have warmed up to a citizen journalism project.
Well, I have to admit that it was difficult to get the Free Press to play in the same sandbox. It took us a whole year, really, to, and I'm not telling tales out of school, but it did take us a year to extract an agreement from the Free Press. There was this idea that this was going to be a conduit for stories for the Free Press, that that journalists or citizen reporters would be taken advantage of, and essentially it didn't happen that way. I mean, we do cooperate on a year by year basis, depending upon what is going on in their industry. And I think what's happening now is they're much more interested today in community engagement than they were, say, 4 or 5 years ago. Yeah. I don't think they really understood what that was all about, but they understand the value of having more people care about them, more people read them, more people, you know, the more people that are reading newspapers, the more people are going to vote. So it was difficult at the beginning, but I think the relationship with the Free Press is going to grow, and it's going to grow because I think the landscape is changing, and I think they realize the value of engaging community at all levels, not necessarily the usual sort of top-down traditional media way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that the project has grown over time. When you look back at kind of what you originally laid out, has there been anything that surprised you or anything that's kind of disappointed you that hasn't quite gotten to where you wanted it to be?
I would say the biggest surprise has been the impact. Like, I thought, because I sort of have this sort of journalism scope or journalism focus, I was really focused on the journalism of it all, and I was less focused on the community engagement aspect of it. So, and that's, you know, for whatever reason, I guess because I've never done a project like this before. Mm-hmm. And I think the thing that really surprised me was that this idea that I had mentioned just a few minutes ago, where you bring people together in the same room, you bring 20 or 30 people together on a regular basis over the course of several years, and all of a sudden I look back and I see that we've trained hundreds of people. We've brought together a community of hundreds of people. There's well over 1,000 people that are signed up to the site in terms of registered there. There's several dozens of reporters at any given time mm-hmm. that may be telling stories. So to me, the idea that we have this group of people from all this diversity of voices, I think is what surprised me the most. I think it was that, I think the impact of that for me in terms of what it meant to the project, what it meant to the city, what it meant to the group of journalists who were becoming involved in this, I think was really a surprise yeah. to me. And I felt that it was a real positive thing to really develop and now to run with. I think, a few years into it, we've got this mechanism that really, really works. And now we can kind of dream big and we can think about, all sorts of other ways to have people's voices heard, in our community.
And what's it been like for you? Now, your background for decades in journalism and documentary, working with people because it's people from all levels, all different backgrounds, all different skill levels, all different, it must be at times, do you ever find it frustrating or you find it rewarding or somewhere in between?
Well, I think it's a bit of everything.
Because you are like the mentor and you provide editorial kind of guidance and help when people need it.
For sure. And I think what really helped was that before I became the convener of Community News Commons, I was doing a lot of documentary and a lot of writing and directing and a lot of TV work. I was also doing some mentoring. I was mentoring young students in high school as well as young Aboriginal filmmakers in the art of making documentaries. So there was I had about 10 years of sort of working with people who were trying to become journalists or trying to become documentary filmmakers. So that really that helped me because I found that experience to be very rewarding personally. And so when it came to convening this particular project, the thing that I love is public media, and I think it's just an incredible thing. Like truly public media, I think is such an important element in our society that we need more of it. And so that's what was really exciting for me as a journalist, is because I've always loved public media. I've always loved helping others tell stories, whether it was by doing a documentary about that particular person. But then I've also, I think for me, it's been a very humbling experience, and it's made me feel privileged to actually be able to work with people who are trying to learn a craft or who maybe have some experience doing it and now they're trying to hone it a little bit more. It's really been a real special thing. It's been probably one of the most interesting, I would say it is the most interesting, most rewarding aspect of what I've done as far as journalism goes.
Okay, well, great. Mm-hmm. Well, that's probably a good place to start. Coming up after, Shirley Qualchuk and Heather Emberley, two of the people who are citizen journalists with CNC, will be joining us. But I'm going to do a couple of PSAs and get them out of the way. So when we come back, we can just finish off the hour with it. So I'll be back in just a few moments. We'll also hear from Roger Curry. And this is West End Dumplings, the radio edition on 101.5 UMFM.
When people have access to sufficient, safe, nutritious food to maintain a healthy and active life at all times, we call that food security. Did you know the University of Manitoba has a food bank? Many students are not food secure. The U of M's Building a Commons course and Sustainable South Osborne Community Co-op want to help change this with the introduction of a permaculture commons on campus. A permaculture commons is like a community garden, where anyone is welcome to participate in the growing of food and share in the harvest according to need or effort contributed. If you support the construction of a permaculture commons on campus, go to southosborncommons.ca to add your name to the list of supporters. And stay tuned to UMFM for more news about the permaculture commons.
This is Arrested Development. You're listening to CJUM 101.5, University of Manitoba.
The Screaming Eagle of Soul lands at the Burton Cummings Theater on Saturday, September 24th, when Dabtone Darling, captivating soul singer Charles Bradley, makes his return to a Winnipeg stage. Having made a name for himself as a riveting live performer that simply can't be missed, tickets for Charles Bradley are available now, starting at only $20 plus fees at any Ticketmaster outlet or online through Ticketmaster.ca. Shine up your dancing shoes and be sure to mark your calendar to catch the incomparable Charles Bradley at the Burton Cummings Theater on Saturday, September 24th. Brought to you by Live Nation and proudly supported by UMFM 101.5.
Sarasvati Productions FemFest 2016 Transformation will bring intimate poetry, insightful comedy, and a multitude of powerful performances to downtown Winnipeg. The 14th annual festival of life-changing plays by women for everyone features talented female artists from across the country, including transgender spoken word poet Antoinette Ray, clown sisters Morrow and Jasp, and theater duo Quote Unquote Collective. FemFest 2016 Transformation runs from September 17th to 24th at the Asper Center for Theater and Film at the University of Winnipeg. Tickets and information are available by phone 204-586-2236 or at femfest.ca.
After touring the world with Alt-J, Winnipegger's Royal Canoe retreated to the studio to create the follow-up to Today We're Believers. And this fall, the Pop Sextet debut their new album at the historic Burton Cummings Theater on Thursday, September 15th. Something Got Lost Between Here and the Orbit is a masterful melange of instruments and sounds that is all about a danceable rhythm, and while you'll pay for a seat, you may not sit down at the show. Advanced tickets are available now for $25 plus fees at all Ticketmaster outlets, so get yours and wear your dancing shoes to the Burton Cummings Theater on Thursday, September 15th. Here all year, come see Royal Canoe, presented by the Winnipeg Folk Festival and proudly supported by 101.5 UMFM.
Many Canadians might know that Peter Mansbridge began his illustrious broadcasting career with the Mother Earth Corporation in beautiful downtown Churchill on the shores of Hudson Bay. That might explain why an American multinational waited until Peter was either on holidays or out of the country to pull the plug on Manitoba's northern seaport. We may never know, because Omnitrax of Denver, Colorado is choosing to not offer one word of explanation about why they have chosen to shut down Churchill, the port facility they took off Ottawa's hands for a song and a handshake in 1997. It's a hard story to follow because governments aren't saying much either, except for Churchill Mayor Michael Spence, who's wondering if he might have to turn out the lights if he's the last person to leave town. Surely we will get some definite answers from Jim Carr, the Federal Minister of Natural Resources. He is Manitoba's senior cabinet member by virtue of the fact he was sworn in 5 minutes ahead of Marianne Mihaichuk last fall. Mr. Carr is gathering intelligence about what's going on, and that's a relief. I wonder what happened to Merv Tweed. He was a conservative backbencher when Stephen Harper was prime minister, and he took such good care of the interests of Omnitrax that they made him the man in charge of their little Canadian operation. It happened just about the time that Harper and company killed the dear old Canadian Wheat Board. If you don't think these events are somehow related, then you just haven't been paying attention. Normally, in early August, a handful of ships would be making their way to Churchill to be loaded up with grain and other goods, bound for Russia and elsewhere, but not this year. Omnitrax also owns the Hudson Bay Railway, and it is still carrying lots of tourists up that way to watch whales and polar bears. My former colleague Peter Warren used to be fond of suggesting that it was time to give Churchill back to those same bears. It seems as though someone may have been listening. I'm Roger Curry.
Well, there we go, and welcome back to West End Dumplings, the radio edition. I'm Christian Cassidy here on 101.5 UMFM, and that last voice you heard there was Roger Curry, and thanks to him for letting me use his commentary on Churchill. You can hear Roger Curry on both CJNU Nostalgia Radio, and he is also a contributor to Community News Commons. He's the one who does the daily news briefs, is that right?
Yes, he does the daily news for CJNU, and we post it at about 6 a.m. on our site, and then he does an update in the afternoon, and we post that around 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Oh, great. I know I get his stuff mailed to me at you know, 4 o'clock in the morning or whatever, which is about the time I'm up. So I always get to see his stuff before I go to bed. So it's kind of weird. You see the day's news before the day even starts.
Yes, so. Indeed.
So we're back, and we have some of the community journalists. Is that a nice phrase to use? Do people mind that? Good, bad, okay. Community journalists, then, who work with the Community News Commons. And I have Shirley Kowalchuk and Heather Emberley. And I'll get, I guess maybe each of you, just so people can put the voices with the names. We'll start with Shirley Kowalchuk. If you can say hi and how long you've been doing stuff with Community News Commons.
Sure. Well, I've been... I think I started writing just recently for Community News Commons, probably just in the last, 3 months or so.
Okay.
But I know that in previous years, the last 2 years, I have dropped into their workshops, always meaning to write, but it just hasn't been until recently. And it's been a fabulous, fabulous experience.
Oh, great. And Heather, and actually, is there a genre that you like to write about?
Or? I don't think so. Okay. Although I do have interests, I like healthcare. I haven't really explored that too much yet. I'm very interested in history, so I've done some of that. But, you know, I was thinking about this question as I was coming here, but I think what the beauty of CNC is that you really can write about anything that simply delights you. For example, the pillars at Hazeldell that was built so long ago, that was always delightful to me. And if one wants to write about it, one has the freedom to do so.
Yeah, that's right. There's no editor telling you, okay, this is what you got to go cover.
And, well, there certainly is an editorial mentor, that's Noah, who gives wonderful direction. I mean, many a time I phoned him and said, you know, I've got all this information. I'm not exactly sure where I need to go with it. This is interesting to me, and that's interesting to me, and we have really what I'd say are in-depth conversations, and he allows me to sort of explore that way and see where it might go.
Okay,
and it's a wonderful experience.
And Heather, to introduce yourself. Tell us how long you've been with CNC and what you like writing about.
Like Shirley, I attended a couple of years ago, and then really, really got into it. I guess with my background, I was a history major, and so I love the history pieces. They definitely call to me. But for career, I was school counselor, so the people, the drama, the interviews, I get very excited about interviewing people and hearing their stories. And I think the beauty of CNC, and I've had, like Shirley said, so much fun. And it's great because sometimes if I mumble, people go, oh, you're from CBC. Yes, I'll talk to you. But once I explain what Community News Commons is, they love that word community, and they have stories to tell. And I'm more than willing to listen to them and write them up.
And I guess in a way that's something, too, that, you know, sometimes come up when some of us radio show hosts are talking, that, you know, because the debate is, well, why don't you just podcast? Right, you know, well, I mean, we could all be sitting home in our pajamas doing our shows from home and sticking them up on a blog and not have to worry about any of this. But there is something about belonging to an organization. There is something about being able to say, I'm not a guy in my pajamas doing a podcast. I am with a radio station. I have a regular radio show and I'm doing something. And I guess maybe for CNC, does that sometimes maybe help in the reporting process?
Well, I can give you an example.
Sure.
I wanted to learn more about reporting on City Hall. So I went to City Hall, and I knew that, you know, reporters are there and, you know, sit and write their story, I guess. But anyways, I went there, and I simply showed up. And the security person asked me what I was doing there. I mean, I was in the public gallery. And certainly I could have been there, but then I told him who I was and that I was writing a story, and he looked at me askance, and I whipped out the cards that were provided with, the CNC card. With that, then, you know, all of that, I guess, questioning from him had receded, and, you know, he showed me to the media gallery, and it was sort of open doors from there, but he kind of gave me a little bit of a hard time. And, you know, when I was there, I found that the journalists who were there, they were so friendly and very helpful. You know, often they would sort of exclaim comments as something happened on the floor. It was very interesting. And actually the architecture of the building and the way the media gallery is built, with glass mm-hmm. right at the top, glass in the front, so you do feel as if you're the whatever estate, fifth estate, fourth estate, yeah. I can't recall. And you know, I'm beginning to learn, too, just through my experiences as a reporter, that, you know, that glass really does mean something. There really does need to be some sort of, you know, professional division and all of the things that, that those mean that often Noah and I discuss.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah. So. And Heather, for interviewing people, I guess that probably less makes a difference, because for interviewing, it's much more of a personal thing. It's how people warm up to you and that type of thing for your interviews. Or do you find that there is a, you know, there's value added by, you know, doing this through CNC rather than kind of having it on a blog or a podcast or something?
Well, coming from academia, you know, it's publish or perish. And mm-hmm. what I found since belonging to CNC, it's book or blog. And right now, CNC has been just a marvelous gateway and an introduction, not only to people and professionals, but just opportunities. It's allowed me to have a different perspective. So interviewing students took on a different focus, interviewing all age groups. And I just have to say that story about the bus driver, I do a lot of writing coming from education about teachers. And I interviewed a woman who was 102, and she's definitely a retired teacher. And what happened to her was... a student that she had in grade four heard the story on CNC about the bus driver and said, I used to have a teacher that always, always read us this poem about, you know, do unto others. And she said, I wonder what happened to Mrs. Deans. Well, Jean Deans is alive and well in Winnipeg. She's 102.
Wow.
And I interviewed her. And it was all because of that bus driver story and CNC. Years, 2 years later. So we never know. I really think we are all an interconnected web. And so you just never know who's going to be reading CNC or listening to your show. And years later, it's going to resonate with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Now, did you fall into, I'll start again with Heather, since we're just talking, I mean, did you fall into CNC, or did you read about it and decide, you know, I really want to get into, or was it?
Somebody told me about
it,
and I thought, oh, that's nice, and didn't explore it for months. Mm-hmm. And then once I saw it again somewhere, then I saw it. I guess I'm a visual learner, because I thought back to the person who told me about it, and then I just checked it out, went to a workshop, and thought, oh, my.
Yeah. And having done it for long, have you seen the types of stories that you do change over time? Or?
Well, I think in terms of, you know, that newspaper world you were talking about, hard news and soft news, I think I'm a soft news person. So I'm doing the reviews and the interviews and the human interest stories. But, you know, one of these days I may get the big crime bus. I don't know. But right now I'm very happy with the 102-year-old and the kids and the kids and everybody in between.
Yeah. Now, Shirley, you said healthcare was kind of an interest of yours. Mm-hmm. So do you see yourself? I mean, well, what did you start kind of writing? I know the history. I read the you know, the gristmill. Do you see yourself kind of evolving into different types of stories, or did you come at it with a, I want to write about this?
I thought I was going to be coming at it in that manner. Mm. But I discovered that it's completely different. If something interests me and I want to write about it, then I'll do it. And I've also discovered that these stories have taken me to places that I never could have imagined. Mm-hmm. You know, most innocent thing suddenly went in another direction, most interestingly. But I would like to... I would like to investigate healthcare and different aspects of it. It's so important. But I find that just hasn't been the process.
Yeah,
I haven't been able to plan so far. It's taken me places. So.
Yeah, well, and that's great. And, you know, too, doing it on a volunteer basis is you are able to kind of experiment with stuff. And having a mentor, you can experiment, try stuff, and it sometimes works, sometimes it doesn't work or whatever, but there's not that pressure on because you're, you know, you don't have a, like I said, a, a paid editor bashing you over the head, or even something like, say, a student newspaper here, which, I mean, you have your deadlines, you have your, you know, it's, you know, it can still be
safe.
Quite pressure filled.
Yeah, it's safe. You know, like, because writing can be a very vulnerable thing.
Yes, yes.
You know, and so for people who don't have a lot of experience in that world, it can be very scary. So it's safe because they're in charge of they're in charge of what story is published, and they own it. They own the copyright to the story.
Oh, okay.
So they can basically do whatever they want with it. And if, you know, if they want to try and sell it somewhere, that's awesome, you know. And but certainly it is, if the journalist has full control and not the editor or the publication, it makes a huge difference to how the reporter feels.
Oh, okay.
And in addition to that, I'm sorry, Heather, in addition to that, we're not stuck in that hard news model, unless we want to be, of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the courses that we take, we certainly learn about that, but and investigative techniques. And Mary Agnes Welch was wonderful when she was discussing
FIPPA, Freedom of Information.
Yeah.
She's the queen of FIPPA.
Exactly.
And so you can write in that manner if you want to. And then, of course, all the other genres we look at. But there is the freedom to take it where you want to go. And, of course, with the mentorship of Noah, it turns out to be... Mm-hmm. To be okay.
Yeah. And Heather, you were going to say?
Oh, I was just going to comment on the value. Yes, you used the word volunteer. I mean, the rewards, you cannot put a price tag on where these experience and these stories can take you. In the beginning, my husband was always, you know, I'd be putting on my little reporter hat and going out with my little briefcase, and he'd say, "When are you going to get paid for this?" And, you know, as time went on, I said, "You cannot put a price tag on the people we've met and the things we've learned and just some of the life experiences. You just can't buy this kind of training."
Yeah, yeah. Now, I think I want to take it back to a bigger question. I'll bring Noah back in here again, is... because some of the things we've touched on are questions that we talk about around here. You know, being a community radio station, we're quite bullish on community, especially as we see kind of the commercial radio world kind of crack and fall around us. We kind of think that there is a future, there is a bright future in community radio, because it's either going to be that, you know, show programmed in Toronto, or it's going to be hyper local where people want to find out who's playing it, you know, at the corner, or who's doing this around town, which is kind of slowly bleeding away. When, like I said, you got radio stations with two staff now at them that, and everything is programmed at Toronto. Mm. And I was just wondering, so where do you see something like, you know, the role of something like Community News Commons, say, 5 years, you know, 5 years down the road, 10 years down the road? Of course, it's hard to tell what happens with, you know, will be happening with news. But I see the Free Press Inc. has lost some money again this year. And, you know, the Sun has certainly had a lot of editorial changes and the way they provide their content. What do you see as the role in the future going forward for something like a community news site?
Well, you know, I think that if you look at... the world of the state of journalism right now, there is a lot of pressure on your traditional media sources. And one of the things that I think has really taken a big hit is something like beat reporting. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, there used to be a time when reporters were specialists within different areas. And that's how we would get a lot of our really really important news stories that would be told.
I used to work at City Hall years ago in the 90s, and I remember in the press room in the basement there. I don't think it's there anymore. It's now the communications center, but it used to be the across from the war room.
Yeah.
And they had their little cubicles. Every one of them was filled. You had
exactly.
A CTV reporter. You had a CKND reporter. You had, you know, the two newspapers you had. I mean, it was full. There were,
yes,
like, you know, Ihor Shaworsky from CJOB was there all the time, and they had two reporters that were there. There were like six or eight people wandering around City Hall all the time. Like, that was their full day. Went to work in the morning at City Hall and went home at 5 o'clock. And, you know, years later, I mean, I was still working there when Glenn was there. And, you know, the odd, I mean, I think CBC and the Free Press had somebody. But other than that, there was you basically had to call the reporters to come down. There was nobody. Right. There was only one or two people that were hanging around. That was such a big change, and it was just in a five or six year period.
Yeah, and I think that I think when we look at that type of situation, we may not understand how serious that is for our community mm-hmm. and for our democracy mm-hmm. and for knowing that those that are in charge of our democracy, those in power, those that are running government or whatever it may be, that they are doing things in the best interest of the public. And I think without a good reporters out there, it becomes very difficult for us to have trust that everything is okay down at City Hall, or everything is okay mm-hmm. down at the Ledge, or in a number of organizations. So I think that what will probably happen with Community News Commons is that I think people will develop into specialty areas of reporting that have gone by the wayside, whether it's City Hall or whether it's environment or whether it's Aboriginal people's issues or whether it's it could be health or whatever mm-hmm. it may be. I think there's an opportunity for the community to really write things that are meaningful and that will make a difference in our community. So it's I see it as the beginnings of an opportunity for us to really create a nonprofit model for journalism in this country that will help in this very difficult time that we have right now in terms of journalism. So I think it's an opportunity. I think it's a changing paradigm right now with regards to media, and that something like Community News Commons as a public trust, something like the Free Press as a public trust, is I think so essential that people begin to understand that those information sources need to be there in order for us to have a healthy democracy. Otherwise, it becomes, I think it becomes pretty thin when you're looking at for information about your community and all you can find is sponsored content from half a world away on the internet.
And
just because that content happens to be free, I'll read. And, mm-hmm. I mean, we can get only so much from BuzzFeed, and we can get only so much from the sponsored content. And I think at some point we need to reclaim the institution that's known as journalism, and we need to support it, and we need to support efforts like CNC or traditional media like the Free Press. I mean, there's a whole different thing happening now. I think they're calling it the new narrative arts, or they're calling it generative journalism, which is really, an opportunity for people to tell different types of stories in different ways. And so I think journalism, as we know it traditionally, is changing and will change radically. And I think CNC Winnipeg Foundation is in a position to really help our community grow in the midst of such an incredible change to something that is so important to our community.
Yeah. Now, for the two people who actually write, not actually write, you write too as well, but for the two people who are writing for, do you get a sense of that happening? Like when you, because you must, you interact with the site quite a bit. What do you think in say 5 years that something like a Community News Commons would end up being, Heather?
Well, just to follow up in terms of where this can lead, if anybody had told me 5 years ago that I would have the whatever to the esteem, the self-esteem to go to the San Francisco Writers Conference, I would not have believed it. But after, a year of doing these stories, and I looked at who was speaking, and I just thought, why not me? And it was because of CNC, and I took my little business cards, and I wore my CNC button on the plane, and it was my shield. I hid behind it. And there were only two Canadians there and one person from Australia. And the one thing we learned there was that there was a lot of talk about how social media, what it's doing to not only book publishing but newspapers. But the one thing they stressed was, because newspapers are changing and fading away in many ways, that people are following writers and not the paper anymore, because the paper isn't there.
Sure. Okay.
And I used to take the Globe and Mail because of Sarah Hampton. And when Sarah Hampton left, I canceled my subscription. Yeah. And then I realized they're right. If you get, like Noah said, somebody focusing on health or environment and you follow mm-hmm. them, no matter where they end up,
that's true.
You
especially
will read.
Now with Twitter, you can, exactly. she's writing in 10 different places. You can yeah. you can read her entire body of work.
So to answer your question, I think CNC will be blossoming in 5 years.
Okay. And Shirley?
Well, I would agree with that, but I'd like to just share a story of how I really tripped into writing mm-hmm. for CNC for the first time. I actually phoned up the Winnipeg Free Press.
Okay.
And I had a story that I thought was great. They didn't think it was so great. They felt that it had been redone or it had been done before. I wanted to cover an East Kildonan phenomenon, and that phenomenon to me was that almost everywhere I'd go with my daughter, I'd frequently see these four guys that looked very jovial and, you know, very mod, and their haircuts were kind of interesting, and they seemed to be always having fun. And I learned that they were a local band, and they were very popular. They played at schools. They had product out that was being played on the airwaves. They played community clubs, and they also were sort of doing their own promotion on social media. Okay. And I took a look at it, and it was very exciting. When I looked at that social media, Panicland, to me, was the best thing. And what was also so interesting about it is that they had involved their fans or their participants or their followers. It was a very interactive thing. And, you know, my daughter Tamara and I are standing in Tim Hortons, and I see these characters, and she goes, "Oh, that's Panicland." <You know? laughs> And it's just, you know, and I thought that in itself was interesting, that this band is promoting itself. It's mm-hmm. not mm-hmm. Seeking, you know, the powers that be to do it for themselves.
Yeah, that's true.
They know
true.
How to do it because yep. they've learned it in school. And I thought that's completely different than when I was their age.
Yes.
And, you know, completely different.
Yep.
So I wanted to write about that, but the Free Press, or at least the person that I was speaking to at the Free Press, felt that that wasn't, you know, had been done in some manner.
Mm.
So I went to CNC, and Noah was really excited about that. And then I wrote the story, and when I saw the story, I couldn't believe my eyes, because he had inserted social media, can I say it mm-hmm. that way?
Yeah.
He had inserted, you know, a song that I referred to, you know,
oh, okay.
songs by
yeah,
the Five
yeah.
Man Electrical
yeah.
Band.
Which is a great thing, but as somebody who blogs, a great thing online is
yeah.
the ability to hyperlink,
oh.
which you don't really, you know, which you don't have really on other,
no, you don't.
You know,
yeah.
And I had never done any of that. So here was my story, not only me telling it, mm-hmm. but then it was told, you know, with these other facets that made it more literate in a way that I couldn't even imagine. And, you know, Noah had done that. And so I'm learning something new. So what do I think about CNC? Well, my eyes are being opened yeah. to what our communications in terms of news or generative journalism or whatever you want to call it can be in yeah. 5 years. I don't know. Mm-hmm. All I know is that I'm certain that it's going to roll.
Yeah. Now, Noah, are there sites? I mean, I know in the state there used to be Chicago. Now I kind of lost track mm-hmm. of them all. But are there sites that are out there that in, you know, whether it be here or overseas or whatever, that you would not necessarily like to model it, but that you were really excited about, like community
yeah.
news sites?
Yeah, there are actually, and when we first started, great help. I mean, because we're, you know, it's interesting. It's a community foundation project. You know, it's a project of the Winnipeg Foundation. And the interesting thing about the community foundation world is that there's about 1,700 community foundations in the world. And I can call up any one of them and ask them for help about something.
Okay.
And not only will they help me, but they'll send me all the material that they used in the project that they were doing. So they love if you beg or if you borrow and steal from them.
Yeah.
Okay. And so there was a project in Grand Rapids called the Rapidian, which was just starting at the same time as CNC, so we exchanged a lot of notes. I looked to projects in Oakland and in Grand Rapids and in Chicago and in other parts of the world to try and figure out what people were doing. And what's happened now is that, in fact, just last year I was involved in a very interesting phone call that was like 90-minute phone call once a week for about 6 weeks, where there was 25 of us from around the world that were involved in sort of form of journal, a different type of journalism, community journalism, generative journalism. And so we were exchanging notes on all these different ways to engage community through a nonprofit journalism community site.
So if you had to pick one or two sites that people should maybe check out,
well, I think
Cat's Meow and Community News.
You know, there's a new one in Calgary that just started up.
Okay.
You know, I wish I could remember the name of it, but I think it's a storytelling site in Calgary. You know, the name escapes me at the moment, but there's also Axiom News out of Peterborough, which AXIOM. That's a very interesting unit in Canada, at least. Yeah. The Rapidian in Grand Rapids is, I mean, these are hyper-local sites, so, you know, but still it's quite an interesting thing. The Oakland, there's a site in Oakland that that is interesting as well. But again, hyper-local, so it's you get a local flavor.
Yeah.
There really isn't, I think it's, for my purposes, it's great to be able to see what they're doing and how they're doing it.
Sure.
But there really is an opportunity, I think, for the development and the growth of nonprofit, sort of community-oriented journalism.
Okay. And we just have a couple of minutes left. I wanted to ask, what is the CNC video booth?
Oh, that's a video booth. That's here, another great example of a collaborative project between Alliance Française du Manitoba.
Okay.
And they had this booth where they had people come up and record poems in French. And so I saw it and I said, hey, do you guys want a partner? And I'll throw in some help to move this booth around the city. And so right now it's at Louis Riel Library. It'll be, I think, on the bridge, on the Provence Bridge at Chez, what's that, the name of that place?
Yes.
Chez Louis,
I think so.
And so it'll be there. It'll also be in other places. And basically, the booth, you can either read a poem in French or English, or you can answer a question. And this month, or at least for the next little while, the question is, what's one thing that you think would improve our community and why? And so a lot of people have been telling all sorts of things about what would improve our community, whether it's bike paths or more youth involvement, community service by families, doing different volunteer work. Lots of interesting answers.
Great.
And so that's the CNC.
So if people want to find out more about CNC and ask about when the different workshops are taking place or the video booth or how to get involved or submit a story or to do a story on it, whatever they would like to do, what's the best way to get a hold of you and CNC?
Well, you can certainly you can get a hold of me at the Winnipeg Foundation. So people can call me at 204-944-9474.
Okay.
They can also, and that's extension 242, actually, at the Winnipeg Foundation. Or you can just go online to communitynewscommons.org. The shortened version is cncwpg.org.
Okay. And you're also on the Facebooks.
That's right. There's a Facebook page for Community News Commons, as well as a Twitter at cncwpg, as well as Instagram. But if you go to the site, you'll see the front page. You can click on the register button, which is on the top right-hand corner, or become a citizen reporter button, which is the same thing. And you can sign up. It takes about a minute. And then you can submit a story. And you can give me a call if you want to talk about the story. And you can certainly, I can certainly give you a helping hand.
And
throughout.
When the next workshops come out, you're saying October, probably?
Yeah, it'll be mid-October to
end
of November.
They do get top-notch people. I mean, they do get, there was one about photography I went to, and it was, you had two or three of, the best news photographers in the city.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing it, you've done, and also audio, so it's not just the writing.
Oh, yeah, no, it's,
you know, it's also the technical how-to. And
that's right, how to record a radio interview, how to edit audio, how to shoot great video, how to edit video, how to write a great article, that sort of thing. And those will go mid-October to the end of November, and we might change them a little bit this year. And maybe add some stuff about that more specific to certain beats, like how to write a good review, how to cover City Hall, how to cover The Ledge, different things like that. We might add that to the mix as well.
Terrific. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you very much. So thank you to Noah, Shirley, and Heather for joining me, and to Roger Curry for providing me with some commentary. I'm Christian Cassidy. I'll be back next week for another edition of West End Dumplings, the radio edition. And you can also check out my blog, West End dumplings.blogspot.com. And I'm going to leave you with something a little bit old, Eddie Fisher and Get Your Paper from 1951. And coming up in just about 2 minutes' time, it's the Celtic music world of Waxies Dargle here on 101.5 WUM-FM.
About the guy who murdered his rival, getting the electric chair. Read about a country's fight for survival. Read about the county fair. See them advertise the latest rage. The kiddies have their comic page, and here's the latest movie in town. There's no one this paper wouldn't please, 'cause every column guarantees a smile, a tear, a laugh, or a frown.